Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age.
Hey everyone, Peter Crosby coming to you from the Digital Shelf Institute's remote HQ in South Boston. Molly Schoenthal beams in from an undisclosed location in Molly, would you call it upstate New York? I don't know.
Upstate Connecticut, low state Massachusetts.
Well, low state Massachusetts, I have a view on that I won't discuss now. Well, I am so excited to have Molly on today because your role as the head of the DSI's executive forum it's a perfect time to talk to you. Just so our listeners know, the executive forum is an invite-only group that's part of the DSI. It's brand manufacturer execs and leaders from across the commerce ecosystem that are interested in sharing viewpoints and expertise on commerce strategies, a way to have sort of conversations among groups, non-competitive conversations about, you know, what these strategies are. And over the past few weeks, Molly has been doing yo person's work, conducting intensive discussion sessions with these members. And so I wanted her on today, especially to share some of the non-confidential output from those discussions that we felt like would be useful to our podcast audience. So Molly, you know, I looked a bit at, you had provided a sort of a output from what the meetings were. And there were a few topics in there that really caught my eye that I wanted you to dig in on with us. The first one was really the acceleration of digital, the changes we're seeing in e-commerce, impact of certain categories, shutdown of ours, sort of a overall view what you're hearing from the forum participants of what's going on out there. Do you want to walk us through a little bit of that?
Sure, absolutely. But first, a caveat. So like all of you at home, you may hear at some point in time, a six-year-old ask for a snack or something.
Or that might be me asking for a snack, but yeah.
If it's great now we have this excuse to not have perfect setting or sonic environment. So just a caveat there. Yes, the executive conversations that we've been having have been really interesting, given the fact that everyone is doing what we're doing now for the first time. No one's encountered a situation like this in their past, and so we're all getting through this together. One of the things we have seen hands down is accelerated, and Peter and I love this word, digitization of...
I just have a trouble saying it. Yeah. Everyone who's listening, just try it, digitization. It's, I don't know, I have a little bit of effort, but it is what's happening. So let's use the word, even if it's a little made up, but go ahead.
So another way to talk about it that's maybe less obnoxious is the accelerated rate of adoption of digital behaviors, primarily e-commerce. Some of our customers have estimated that they've seen acceleration in ways that would have taken them between 3 and 5 years to achieve otherwise. Wow. So yeah. More people buying their category online where this didn't seem possible before. And the reason it didn't seem possible is because some of our customers have brands in categories that people weren't buying online previously. So think about anything in the middle of the store. That was really hard for people to gain adoption in pasta sauce, rice, flour, alcohol brands. So even though a lot of folks in New York know it's really easy to get alcohol delivered through someone like Drizly, not everyone was aware of it or certainly using that capability. In fact, Nielsen calls this aspect of e-commerce. I love how everything has to be really epic when an analyst firm talks about it, but the third threshold, we need the third threshold. It's like breaking the third wall, maybe.
Were they clear on what 1 and 2 thresholds were?
I don't know.
I'm sure. Okay.
Yeah. But it's pantry prep.
So
demographics that have previously not extended their e-commerce buying habits to pantry prep are now doing so. And we're seeing a huge growth in the 60 plus demographic. I think we can all point to someone in our lives in that demo who just recently learned how to use Instacart or some other e-commerce tool.
Yeah, Molly, you'll remember that at the WPP conference in Miami before all this madness started. Walker Smith, J. Walker Smith from Kantar, did a whole presentation on that generation being kind of the secret commerce opportunity for brands that they just cannot afford to ignore over the next few years. And this probably accelerates that even further.
Absolutely. In fact, he had a talk where he was talking about like sort of the great evolution of tech is sort of the de-teching of tech, because we have this growing older population in the US, and the changing shape of our population. We look like we're moving, we have looked like we're moving from a bell to something that resembled a cat. Remember that, cat ears?
Yes.
And those cat ears were sort of people that are 60 plus, and they're learning how to use e-commerce at a relatively rapid rate if they haven't already. So we see recipe app usage up 40%, grocery is up 30%, and the numbers from coming from China are, users age 40 years and older have risen by, or usage by ages 40 years and older has risen by 237%. I mean, these numbers are huge. And when I talk to our customers who are benefiting from this trend, it's like a little bit of an embarrassment of riches given the sort of global climate. And it's sort of like, yes, this acknowledgement that when everyone was sort of stocking up, we saw this huge growth and even in some cases record sales. But then there's a sort of cautious optimism. Like, we don't know how long this is going to last, and we hope that some aspect of it will last, but we're not kind of resting on our laurels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're also seeing, there's there's some that are feeling the glow in some categories, and then there are some in other categories that are not.
There's a really, really rough situation right now with apparel and some aspects of beauty or categories that are considered non-essential. So we even see shutting down of e-commerce sites. So not just retail environments, which we would have expected, but we've seen reports that TJ Maxx, Marshall's, Victoria's Secret, and Home Goods, although I'm sure she has more than one secret, are shutting down their e-tail sites. This is heartbreaking, right? Because you would think that those are sort of the last bastions of commerce for brands that are suffering out of being deemed sort of non-essential for the moment.
Yeah, I think, and I think with all of these shifts happening, we're seeing budgets get moved around in response. And for some, that means hunkering down and really trying to make those choices. And for some, they're making the choices they have to make. I think we all are. But what have you been hearing from exec forum members about where budgets are going these days?
Yeah, that has been an interesting conversation. We've heard from some beverage brands or alcohol brands, alcohol and spirit brands, that they have had the opportunity to repurpose teams that would have been selling directly to restaurant and hospitality to e-commerce. So rather than having a team sit on a route to market that is shrinking or non-active right now, they're teaching that team how to make their product and their category more available in more places, even retailers that they might not have had a chance to set up for e-commerce. So that's kind of a happy ending story in that way. There's also, yeah.
Go ahead. Well, I was just wondering if, because where money goes inside organizations, often power shifts and silos break down. And it might be too early to know whether those things are happening, but have you gotten any sense of whether, as consumer behavior might be shifting, perhaps finally some of the walled gardens that exist within organizations might be shifting as well, and teams might get more blended or at least more collaborative? Or,
I mean, one would hope so. So yeah. In situations, especially like the one I was referring to, where you're repurposing channel team to e-commerce, you would and reskilling or upskilling, you would hope that that company would then realize the opportunity to break down some of those silos. And also when you think about the repurposing of field marketing teams or seasonal teams who might have been planning for the Olympics or media upfronts that have now been canceled for certain categories, to allow them to use some of their time and energy to places where the brand is now expanding its presence, makes sense, right? Yeah. And you can only hope that those behaviors are longer lasting. Wells Fargo told us, or not us, actually Micmac, who's have another series of really amazing webinar calls. That
they're and who, by the way, Rachel will be doing a webinar with us with the DSI on April 7th. And I'll have the link for finding out about that at the end of our podcast. Sorry, just
Rachel Tipograph, one of the
fantastic,
most awesome brains on the topic of digital commerce and changing consumer behavior that I know. And so much to say on her that I won't even start. She's amazing. Wells Fargo redeployed teams to help customers with knowledge services in light of having to change their strategies, their saving strategies, investment strategies, loan strategies. So, yeah, one would hope that all of this would lead to some collapsing of the silos.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the subtitles in your recap that I saw had pave cow paths. Can you explain that, please?
This is a direct quote from Wayne Dwan. If you're listening, Wayne, from Constellation Brands. And I also like it because it reminds me of walking through downtown Boston, which makes no sense to me.
Walking makes sense. It's just the streets make no sense at all, is what you're saying.
No, the walking makes no sense. Oh. I spend extra time getting places that are closer to me.
Yeah, for anyone that's not familiar with Boston or the legend of sort of the downtown area was originally, you know, it was tread by horses and cows, and that's how roads became part of it. And in typical Bostonian fashion, they didn't bother to sort of re-grid it when we actually started to grow the city. And as a result, it's just a series of winding paths that happen to have tar on them and a lot of horrible drivers. So the cow paths come from that.
So to borrow this visual image of a series of winding paths, consumers tend to establish a series of winding paths between where they are and what they need and how to get there. And regardless of how many user journeys you create or ways that you plan to move them through the quote unquote sales funnel from initial impression through to conversion, they will take their own course. And especially nowadays, consumers, I suppose, are getting pretty creative on how and where they buy. I ended up buying toilet paper from a B2B Jansan supplier. So we actually have these economy gas station size toilet paper rolls that we're raffling off every week in the exec forum. And our boss, Rob, is probably the only person in history to go to kingarthurs.com to buy his flour.
He's in a sourdough kick right now, and it's hilarious to hear about.
You know, whatever it takes to get by. So, in any case, Wayne and team are sort of noticing where consumers are navigating themselves to and from and making sure that their category can be found there. So this may include making themselves digitally available and available to fulfill in suppliers and retailers that they wouldn't normally have inventory with. Mm-hmm. Or in modes of purchase or routes to market that are normally like second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth priority for them. So this is what Wayne calls paving cow paths. And I think it's a really smart and actually relevant way to think about it.
Yeah, and I would imagine that part of that repathing also includes more and more either experiments or even deep leans into direct to consumer.
Yeah.
Is that what you're seeing?
In some cases, yes. So I have heard at least 5 people say, I can ask for what I want right now in terms of budget. So I'm an e-commerce manager. I'm in charge of the only part of our business that's growing. Not to sound too mobster about it, but like whatever I ask for, I get. Right? Like, job happen.
Yeah.
And in that spirit, experiments with D2C modes of operation, like, you know, someone going to kingarthurs.com or something that is potentially more intuitive, like a D2C or a .com site for a brand that is like a confections brand or a face cream. E-commerce folks are seeing the opportunity to develop those routes to market now because people will take them. They will pave that cow path to getting the products that they want.
Yeah.
And you get really excellent data and insights if you can establish enough traffic in those places. So all of that heartache that you may be experiencing as a brand around having your relationship mediated by e-retailers and having them own the insight into your consumer, potentially you can gain some of your lost land back by experimenting with D2C in this moment. However, I want to caveat that.
And yeah.
For brands that are stretched right now, it may be all that they can do to pump out a few top performing SKUs to, big e-retailers and D2C sort of like,
yeah,
no way.
That's where these things, you know, the conversations like this always become a bit problematic because it depends on, you know, your business, your financial situation, where you are already and where most of your sales are coming from. And so it's always difficult to do.
God forbid some baking soda brand, you know, is like, Molly said, go D2C.
Yes. not a good idea.
Not that you shouldn't baking soda. No. It's totally viable. Rob will buy you directly.
And so as we think about those opportunities for the cow paths, mm-hmm. No matter where the path, where the consumer is led, it does seem like particularly now, the need for content created rapidly and created engagingly is ever more important. Like if right now, even if people aren't necessarily interested in buying your product, they may still want to hear from you. You have to decide when and how and where to engage. And I would imagine that need for content as the world kind of shuts down around us, it's a problematic requirement right now. Are you hearing some of that?
Yes. Yes, a lot. And just to backpedal a minute around the D2C story, there's an important component that I left out, which is subscription. There is a little bit of a revitalization of subscription, which became sort of problematic in that people were like, it's coming too often. It's coming not enough. Like, I don't want to do subscription. I want to go back to like Amazon 24-hour. But in a climate where, you know, you click something on Amazon and now you can get it in like 5 weeks, maybe subscription sounds a little more reasonable. At least that company who's providing your product can have a better handle on allocating supply. And you can have, I think, more consistent expectations for when and how much will arrive. So, okay.
Now I do wonder, Jeff Bezos's famous line about your margin is my opportunity. I do wonder if Amazon's reduced focus, rightly so, is other brands' opportunities, other retailers' opportunity to pick up that slack.
I think so. There are certain categories that Amazon's just not going to be fulfilling right now, which is brutal, but necessary, I suppose, when you think about the overdrive that it's in around other types of products that are deemed necessities. But anyhow, content. So Rachel at Micmac actually brought up a really good point a few weeks back that it takes more than a couple people to do any kind of photo shoot or creative shoot, and that's already more people than you want to be around these days. So how do we create content when we don't have the use of our normal resources like agencies in the way that they would normally operate and shoots and new content in the way that it would normally get to you. So there's been this huge conversation around not only the logistics of new content, but the messaging of content. So all the stuff that you had planned to say may no longer be relevant. So this idea that you're throwing out your content playbook and you have to kind of invent sometimes new, sometimes old things to say again. So what do you want to say about your brand now? Some of our customers are turning to listening to SEO results or ways in which the words around their brand are used with other words to get insight into people, how people now relate to their brands, how people are now using it. Do you remember when Elmer's glue suddenly became like a big component of slime? And then yes. Suddenly they were selling more and then they started actually marketing slime themselves or kits. I think there's another one of those opportunities out there or another many of those opportunities out there for brands to understand the way in which consumers are now relating to their product, given the sort of shift in their personal lives. They're also turning to UCG. I've heard on more than a few occasions that execs are really interested in how consumers with increasing amount of time on their hands are using, photographing themselves, commenting on, making their own branded content, which, you know, there is data that would tell you it is more salient than content issued by the brand itself.
Certainly it's easier to get, you know, if you're not, if your production facilities or your connections for photographers and copy and agency is struggling right now, then turn to your customers and let them speak for you. I would imagine that is an easier thing for your teams to handle.
I think I heard one exec, not I think, I did hear one exec talking about shipping out photo shoot kits to their team so that people who work at a brand could, you know, create their own product shots, which is pretty cool.
That is awesome. That is so great. I mean, we are seeing that kind of creativity out there. I mean, even as a consumer level, watching TV, we've just reached now the point where enough time has passed that now the ads are coming into the stream that refer to the current situation, right, whether obliquely or particularly. Like you can see the Netflix ads in the bus stops in New York that give away spoilers for the series and say, you shouldn't be reading this, you should be at home. Right. You know, there's from that to, a brand that just talks about, in these times, we are here to, however well or not that works, you can see that they had the chance. It took a couple of weeks to sort of make those content shifts happen.
Right. I mean, there's this case study out through Ad Age about Ford, who threw together a new creative campaign in a few days, which is pretty remarkable considering. And then finally, you know, once everyone has gone through the exercise of being super scrappy about creative, how much will people be willing to pay for it in the future? So now that we've understood what it's like to create content or lower the cost of creative at scale, what does that mean for the future, for agencies, for right, what brands are willing to pay? What's the value that we assign to that content work? So interesting stuff.
And one of the things I know way back when you went to CES, it feels like 900 years ago, but it really wasn't that long ago. You had said you were seeing an increase in like more capability to have digital interactions and sampling of things. Do you feel like some of that's now starting to come to fruition in this time? Or
So it's interesting. When I was at CES, there were a lot of skeptics around some of the digital assistance and digital technology that was meant to sort of look human. There was a wall where they had these avatars that were super creepy, very human looking. And people were kind of attracted and repulsed by them just because they were so real. There was this feeling that, what is it, you know, you're creepy. What does it mean to be human?
It's kind of like the Cats movie.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, or that sort of that idea of deep fakes, you know, yeah. I trust what I'm seeing kind of a thing. However, now that we're in the situation that we're in, where you have folks like Postmates talking about contactless deliveries, we start to think more about the acceleration of that technology that allows quote unquote human interactions with no humans present. So things like the autonomous delivery bot that we saw from FedEx, or the drones that we saw from Walgreens, or these virtual people suddenly become potentially something that we might be seeing more of sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, even if you go to the sort of the core of the digital shift that's happening right now, Zoom put out a I don't know whether it's a release, but some of the news that in December, Zoom had, which is the technology we're using right now to record our podcast, they had a maximum of like 10 million daily users. And then in March, they reached more than 200 million daily users across both free and paid channels. Like that's, I mean, if you're looking for the distillation of look at the shift that's happening, that's
crazy. That's yeah. I start to think about some of the augmented reality technology, especially things that we've developed in-house at Salsify, like that ability to take product catalog data and put it in your room, like a chair. I think one of the bathroom appliance manufacturers, one of the big names, and I don't want to get it wrong, so I'm not going to say it, has this app where you can sort of put a toilet or a sink in your house and sort of see what it might look like, or even a fixture. So anything on house.com. Have you ever played around with that, where you can sort of flip around a fixture or a couch?
A little bit, yeah, yeah.
So you can imagine that, and that's easy to imagine. It's also easy to imagine what a virtual environment looks like, because if you've played around with your Zoom backgrounds, you know, you can put yourself on a beach, or Peter and I like to put ourselves in front of our Digital Shelf Institute logo. We look like pastors. Agencies are now putting sort of the name and title of the person speaking to a client behind them, you know. So you now imagine, it's easy to imagine what putting yourself in a virtual environment looks like. Now, if you can combine those things, it's not so far-fetched that you could have an augmented reality store experience in your home. So Nielsen is reporting that artificial virtual reality technology has the potential to bring an in-store experience into your home, the ability to kind of pick up and inspect products, have a virtual assistant. In fact, anyone who's played with a Facebook virtual reality headset, Oculus, probably gets what I'm talking about. Like, yeah, of course, that's the next thing that we want to do. Like, I can walk down a virtual aisle of a store, pick something up, turn it around, look at it, put it into my cart, get that feeling, the feeling that I have when I'm shopping versus having to scroll through rows of things. It's not so hard to imagine that that's coming soon.
Yeah, it does feel like it might be accelerated, because, you know, we haven't seen that happen at the pace that prognosticators were saying, but it might be that this is another place where things start advancing 3 to 5 years. And it does feel like, also, I think you heard from members of the forum that there are some that really are starting to think about, you know, whatever version of life after this, of what should they be creating now that will allow them to provide, you know, new experiences as the world opens back up. Did you get any sort of feedback on that?
So I think the great white hope for brands, especially those in luxury and apparel categories, is that there will be this pent up demand.
I know I'm feeling it.
All the stuff that I wanted to go out and do and see and buy, that I'm not doing and seeing and buying now because I'm uncertain about my financial security, about my future, about my friends and family, and just practically unable to do that for safety reasons, that at some point all of that will be unleashed. And the unleashing will look like an uptick in purchasing of items that are really struggling right now, and the continuation of certain shopping habits that I've developed as a result of having to cope with being confined to my home. So I mean, that's a really great story. And I hope that is what it is. A lot of people are turning to China or the data coming from China to see whether or not there's any indication that that's real.
Yeah, I mean, it's wonderful to kind of end this podcast on a little bit of hope that even the brands that are struggling right now and not in high demand at the moment, you know, if the core teams that they have can be turning their minds to what do we want when consumers have the need again, let's show up in as compelling a way as possible and as connected a way as possible. And what are the things we can be doing to prepare for that moment? And in the meantime, you see so many of the luxury brands just having conversations with their customers, just creating connections through experiences that I think are just dealing with the present moment, but hopefully moving on towards that time where we're back in whatever new form.
Funny visual for pent up demand, which is like just like supermarket sweep, you know,
luxury item.
Into a Balenciaga store and yes.
Busting down the door of Prada.
Yeah, or having these sort of like we're allowed to go back outside again parties, and you're buying presents that you.
Oh yeah, and there are going to be some rug buying going on when we bust past this time. No. So Molly, thanks for sharing the feedback and the interactions you've been having from the forum. I think a really nice pulse of what's going on out there and with some hope for where we're headed. So that is it for today's episode. You know, as regular listeners know, we have created a Digital Shelf Virtual Summit series of content experiences that are going to roll out over the next few months. That is content really about driving your strategy across a wide array of topics in commerce. So if you're interested in sort of seeing what's going on, what's coming up in addition to the Rachel Tipograph McMack thing on April 7th, we're talking about B2B and Amazon Business on April 21st. We've got just a crap load of stuff coming out, which we're really excited about. And you can check that out at salsify.com/digital-shelf-summit-2020. So salsify.com/digital-shelf-summit-2020. So dash to the website.
Go there.
Check it out. Yes. And thanks as always for being part of our community.
Stay well, everyone.